Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Just stop by the Crazy Moose Casino in Mound Lake Terrace and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. We're over at Safeco Field today, which is great. Love being here. First matinee game of the year at home, Brock. And so we're here, as we often are, to talk to Scott Service. We'll do that at 9:30 this morning, hoping that it was going to be coming off a win last night.
Yeah.
That's obviously not the case. But we'll get to the Mariners coming up here in a half hour. 7:30, a little Mariners conversation. But where they're at, as they play the best, and you got to experience it up close and personal yesterday. But it was near the end of our show when news kind of dropped out of the heavens on us. Like, nobody was expecting this to be a story yesterday. And then all of a sudden we have Greg Bishop in to kind of talk about nothing related to this at all. He's written this great piece about Jake Locker, and okay, fine, we're talking about that. And I don't know, the more I ended up thinking about this throughout the, like, when he told me, you saw my face.
Oh, yeah. What?
Like, it just, I mean, it was dumbfounding.
Yes.
It was really dumbfounding for a guy that I've, you know, that I like and don't like at times for various reasons. But ultimately, I would say he's been one of my favorites over the last 5 or 6 years here in Seattle. And when Greg Bishop said this here about Mike Bennett, I'll admit, I was pretty blown away.
I was with Michael Bennett all fall last year. Story never ran, unfortunately. But, like, he was telling me he read books during team meetings last year. Like, that was, like, he said it just kind of normally. He'd heard Carol say the same thing over and over for 7 years.
I mean, you hear my reaction right there. Oh, hey, thanks, dude.
It just wasn't your face. It was also your mouth.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. I'm glad I got a chance to hear that again. Like, yeah. Oh, okay. Like, oh, great. You just are reading during...
How much did you think about this yesterday?
Fair amount. And yes. I was sitting there. I wrote to you guys yesterday, and I tweeted about it yesterday. I was sitting. I took Avery. Imagine this. I've picked up Avery. I have brought her over to her gymnastics class.
Nice.
She's inside doing gymnastics. I'm outside the little window typing up some notes for you guys for today.
Uh-huh.
And I just start, like, this is making me, like, kind of red with anger as I think about, like, what the heck, Mike? Come on, Mike B. You're better than this, man. And then I started almost kind of getting sad for Pete, because it's sad to hear, like, Pete was this good. It's like a movie script where, like, the guy really is nice, and, you know, whether it's the nice lieutenant in the office or whatever, and then everyone just, like, rolls all over him, and it's obnoxious.
But then...
Pete Carroll is not Bill Belichick. He is not a repressive regime who makes you, you know, as Wyman was saying, he was not Chuck Knox, who's demanding of you and yelling at you for everything you do. He essentially gives you as much freedom. And you what, got tired of hearing the same stories so much so that you disrespect your coach? It's just, it makes me sad, but it also makes me mad, man.
But,
come on.
But then you started talking to yourself.
Yeah, there's a part of me that says.
Yes, you start talking to yourself as Avery's doing her triple lutz.
Yeah, triple sow cow.
She's jumping into the pads.
They don't do that in gymnastics,
okay.
No, it's really more of a figure skating move.
Yeah, she's on the trampoline. She's doing backflips, front flips, everything else.
How well you know Avery.
Yes, for sure. And then you're thinking to yourself, hold on a second, self. I typically say on my radio program, you know, I don't put a lot on this on the players. I tend to criticize the coaches and the GMs and put the onus on them. It's on you. It's on you to get the most out of them. In fact, just about 10 minutes earlier, I think in that time with Greg Bishop, there were some comments about the NFL and the Titans for drafting Jake Locker. Like, you got to know. You have to know what you're getting here.
You do have to know, and some of that is on Pete and John for re-signing him. But in this – and look, I think they ultimately come out and do the right thing by moving on from Mike Bennett. You can't do that. You can't have one of the guys on your team, one of the leaders, one of the veterans on your team, publicly, or at least publicly in the room, disrespecting you like that. That is a blatant show of disrespect. There's no way he needs to be reading during that moment. You're just trying to prove the point. You're trying to show the rest of the room that you're too cool for school. You're trying to become a class clown.
Yes.
Not in public, but
yes.
in the room.
Not Sean Dawkins. and I have a vivid memory of this. Not Sean Dawkins, before one of my first, actually not.
I don't know who that is. Who's Sean Dawkins?
Sean Dawkins was the old Cal wide receiver that played in the NFL a long time, about 6'4", played for the Colts. You would recognize him. He played about 10 years in the league. And he comes to Seattle. Good guy, eccentric. I mean, a unique Cal guy. And this is before my first start in the NFL against the Indianapolis Colts at Husky Stadium. And I look over there, and before the game, he's in just a towel studying his Spanish book, like learning a second language. I'm like, oh, that's kind of unique and interesting. But you know what? He's on his time. He's not in a team meeting. He's on his time doing his own thing, which, you know what, a lot of the guys do, and they do it in their own ways. They express themselves in their own ways. But you're in
it's
a team.
Private.
You're in a team meeting. You're a team leader. You're in the team meeting, and you're just tuning coach out. Mike, this is
No, hold on. You're not just tuning coach out. You're publicly showing everyone else on your team that you're tuning them out. It's one thing to sit there quietly and, hey, you know what, I've heard all this before and, you know, whatever. I don't really need to hear it again. It's another thing to take out your book and show the world that something else is more important to you than whatever it is Pete Carroll is trying to do to get you ready for that week's game.
Player-initiated or team?
It's always Pete. It's always Pete. So we always go into the Kumbaya meet room and sit there in Kumbaya.
Look, it's very clear that this is on Pete and John for allowing this to go on as long as it did. I agree with you.
First and foremost,
you can't allow that stuff to happen, and ultimately they responded to it. They cut Richard Sherman and traded Michael Bennett for nothing. So clearly they reacted to what Michael Bennett did. Pete didn't find a new way to reach them. Maybe he didn't know how. And John re-signed them at a time when maybe he shouldn't have let it go on too long. So, yeah, they're going to bear some of the responsibility in my book because I think the GM and the coach are always responsible. But that doesn't make me any less disappointed in Mike Bennett.
Yeah, I think three quick things here, and this is going to be a fun topic conversation with all of you at 8 o'clock. We'll open up the phone lines. I think three quick things.
I'm so mad I have to have nice music at every practice. It's so awful being here. The way we have fun by the lake, and Pete lets us do whatever we want. It makes me so mad. I'm going to disrespect this guy. He's being such a jerk. He's always telling me the same fun stories.
Three quick things here. Can I have a quick three things you need to know on this topic?
Sure.
Number one, Lydia Cruz. Number one, that sometimes, not sometimes, but oftentimes, your greatest strength can also be one of your greatest weaknesses. And one of Pete's greatest strengths is his compassion, his empathy, his wanting to really promote that individual expression and freedom and everything that he gives guys. And it was one of the greatest strengths as they built that team up, unique from the NFL, turns out to be one of their greatest challenges in the end. Number two, I'm right there with Dave. Like, you just don't know how good you've got it. You know, when Richard was talking about, you know, the number of times, remember on Mondays where Pete would say, well, I talked to Richard and you're going to hear from him. And the number of times he extended an olive branch. And what did Richard do? He just snapped it. Like, Bo Jackson, snap it over my knee. Nope, not going to do it. Snap it over my knee. Michael Bennett, same deal. It's constantly, constantly having cover for him. Mike, we knew it. Some stuff behind the scene. He constantly covered. And you know, that's what you do in response to so much of it. And then lastly, I'll say this. You know, this to me starts with Marshawn. This started way back when with Marshawn. Marshawn practiced when Marshawn wanted practice. Marshawn got on the bus when Marshawn wanted to get on the bus. Marshawn did the position drills that Marshawn wanted to do. And I think that was some of the initial impetus for a Richard,
maybe,
for a Bennett, for an unbelievably strong-minded guy.
But it sure
guys.
Seemed to have gotten worse afterwards. And Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, two guys that, you know, look, they have interesting and loud public personas. Maybe they were influenced by what Marshawn did. I don't know. Maybe they wanted to play the anti-hero like Marshawn. I don't know. But it really bummed me out to hear all that yesterday.
The other
because
guys.
Because it's just taking advantage of a good thing.
Yes.
And by the way, you didn't do it right off the bat. You did it after you saw that it worked. I think that's the thing that maybe is the biggest kick in the pants on all of this, the kick in the teeth. Like, it's the one thing to show up and it's like, yeah, forget this guy. He's going to be all lackadaisical. Cool, I'm going to skirt the rules, and what do I care? Okay, fine. And that never works, and then everybody just kind of, you know, Pete gets fired, and you move on in the first couple of years. He's shown you that he can go to back-to-back championship games and win one of them. He's shown you that you can have one of the best defenses in the league every single year. He's shown you that you can go to the playoffs every season. And for that, you choose to treat him with such disrespect?
What if it was a
Are you blind?
Hey, what if it was a good book?
What book could it possibly be?
What if it was his manuscript? I mean, you just don't know that end of it, too.
Yeah, I know. Just the same way Cliff Avril could only find one flight to Haiti. This is the only time during the day I could possibly find to read a book. Spare me. 710. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Yeah, Michael Bennett, according to Greg Bishop yesterday on our show, was so checked out on the Seahawks last season. He spent team meetings just reading books rather than listening to the coaching staff. This is what Mike B told Greg specifically. Yeah, I'm not at all wild about this activity. But I'll say this. Kudos to the Seahawks for figuring this out and starting to move on. Pete Carroll and John Schneider recognized, and we've said this before, it was time to take the power back. The power had shifted too greatly into the hands of a few players that were not treating it the way it needed to be treated. And so Pete Carroll and John Schneider move on from those guys. Goodbye, Mike B. Goodbye, Richard Sherman. Goodbye, Malik McDowell. Goodbye, Marshawn Lynch, even a few years ago. And you're going to need to now replace them with guys who are equally as talented, but hopefully those young guys are going to show the respect that the program truly deserves.
Yeah, I guess this is maybe one final stamp on and for all of us kind of showing what an unbelievable run they had. What an unbelievable run. I have said it before, and I'll say it again. It's the greatest run in sports history in this town that we have ever known, with a world championship and nearly a second other. But it was time. It was clearly time. Players make the decision for you in ownership and management to be on the ball club, to be in a starting lineup, to get their reps and opportunities. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, though, they often make their decisions for you as well when the time is up, and it was definitely done with this team.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the Astros are really, really good, and they showed it again last night. They were tied at one with the Mariners. All of a sudden, in the sixth inning, they just decided to blow it wide open with a six-run seventh. They showed off a really good pitching staff so far in this series, a really good bullpen, a really good defense, a really good lineup, really good arms. Whatever it is you want a baseball team to have, the Astros have it. So now 1-2 here in the series. Mariners have a chance to salvage a split as Marco Gonzalez goes today against Charlie Morton. Day Baseball will talk to Scott Servais at 9:30 this morning.
Yeah, the number of times last night sitting in this beautiful ballpark, and by the way, the sun is shining through. This is about as nice a view as you're ever going to have in sports as we sit here and in broadcast from Safeco Field today. The number of times I sat watching that game last night with my friends, and I turned to them and said, is there anything these Astros do not do exceptionally well?
No.
Is there anything in this game of baseball? They play unbelievable defense, took two runs away from you, one with a play at the plate, one jumping over a wall. They make every other play defensively, Correa and Altuve, and even a backup third baseman. Bergman wasn't even playing third baseman. It makes a tremendous play. They run four pitchers out right now that have sub-2 ERAs. Their bullpen is deep. They've got power throughout their... I mean, there's nothing they cannot do. It's why they were World Series champs last year. It's why, in some ways, I think they're the envy of many in how they built it in baseball, and it's why they're going to be awfully tough in 2018.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
5 o'clock today, set a little reminder, Seahawks 2018 schedule will be released. One game we do know is they'll face the Raiders in London on October 14th. But other than that, we'll get a full look at the schedule at 5 o'clock tonight. Danny, Dave, and Moore will be breaking that down shortly afterwards. Schedule day is fun. I like to kind of... I mean, if you work in this business like we do, you start kind of planning out your fall and winter trips around where the Seahawks are going to be, rather. But, you know, I think there's a few things people will look for. How many primetime games do they get? Where are the East Coast games? Where are the franchise quarterbacks? Brock, all things you'll be looking at tonight.
Yeah, I got three things, I think, as I boil it down when the schedule comes out. Number one is just trying to avoid, if you can, the back-to-back East Coast trips. I'm done with the 10 a.m. stuff. This team is going to be young and going to be hungry, you know, once again in 2018. That doesn't bother me as much, but it's the mileage and it's the back-to-back trips to the East Coast. It's spreading out the franchise quarterbacks. Even when this team was elite and humming, you know that franchise quarterbacks make your life difficult, and I hope with some young players that you can spread those guys out over the course of the season and maybe even backload, you know, when you do see some of those elite guys. And then lastly, it's just some of the weather conditions, either the boiling hot conditions in September that have been at times a challenge, or the inclement weather that Russell, I think, is still challenged by. Yeah. Seeing how all of that plays out. Those are three little variables with the schedule released today, I'll be keeping an eye on.
And those are three things you need to know every every single day, of course, at 7:10. Yeah, the inclement weather thing is odd. You would think playing in Seattle that wouldn't have been such a thing for them. But yeah. Russell has definitely struggled in the freezing cold. The team has struggled in the really intense heat. We saw it last year in Tennessee. I mean, it is odd that some of that has happened, but you know, it's hard to deny at this point.
You know what this day is going to be? I can just feel it. It's going to be a deeply personal day. You know, the Bennett stuff just makes it personal. I yesterday, I did two things. I don't know.
No, you embarrassed yourself. You told me the story and what you did.
One of them I did, but the other one, like I brought Howdy with me last night.
That's
one of my
one
buddies.
I meant.
It was a men's group. Oh, that's the one you
meant. Yeah, no, I meant when you brought Howdy with you.
Okay.
That's always embarrassing for everybody. Brock's got some stories to tell. Mike B's got us fired up. The professor's on the line.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
Well, quite a day yesterday. After we talked to you, we had Greg Bishop in, who's great from Sports Illustrated. He always tells good stories, and weren't really expecting him to just barely even mention it. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, when I was talking to Mike Bennett, he said that he would just read books during Pete Carroll's team meetings. How do you react when you hear that?
Just strange. I know I was talking to Dave Wyman about it, and he's never seen anything like that. And I think what it does show, and again, there's that standard line in coaching, particularly in the NFL, that if you stay anywhere longer than 10 years, that message kind of gets a little bit stale. And I guess with some of the core group guys on defense, like Michael Bennett, might be Richard Sherman with the Kumbaya speech, that it has kind of gotten a little bit old. But again, you know, it's always one with Pete Carroll that now you're refreshing the roster, and the message is still clear that he'll be able to get it back. And so I think you can now get a little bit more into the insight why some of the guys that were here and have been part of the core in the last several years are no longer here.
You know, JC, we talked about this the other day when the report initially came out about Malik McDowell being released. It hasn't happened as of yet this week. Is there any timing scenario to that?
Not really. I mean, honestly, the better timing is to wait until June. And thereafter, because then you don't have to take the prorated hit on the cap right now as far as the signing bonus. So you can pick it more into next year. You can still do a June 1st and almost accomplish the same thing. But the one thing that we still don't have, I haven't been able to see. Now, there are guarantees in the base salary, partial guarantees in the second year. But also part of that is we don't know the language of the way it was done. Because remember, this contract was done after the ATV injury and after the accident. And so because of that, I'm sure there's probably language in there that saves the team from losing too much. And so I think it's one of those legal things. And again, there's the timetable. I mean, I know that it's been reported as happening soon. I know they would like to try to, you know, steer clear and move on. But also the financial ramifications of the way the contract are still could delay it for some time.
John, as the Seahawks have made a lot of changes to their roster this year, what do you think was the biggest factor in that? Is the turn coming because of age of players, or is it coming in or because of some of the issues like the Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman and sort of the messaging to those players? Which do you think played a bigger role in this?
Well, I think the biggest role now is just probably, you know, a little bit of the age factor. But I think, you know, you have to check off all of the above, because now, I mean, it's got to look a little strange when you're looking at, you know, Michael Bennett reading a book during meetings and things like that when Pete's doing speeches. And, you know that Richard, particularly 2 years ago, Sherman, you know, was, you know, very kind of critical of the way things are going and the messages and all those different things. But I think it all kind of goes into it. But I think the biggest thing is, I mean, they didn't make the playoffs. You know, you started to realize there's age now creeping into the defense, and now you start to have to get younger, and you have to try to see if there's a way to make it so you can get back to where you were. So I think it's kind of a whole combination of things that now we're kind of seeing unfold.
Isn't it kind of fascinating when you just step back a little bit? On the spectrum of things, you've got the ultimate player, coach, and Pete. Right, I mean, just the empowerment, the empathy for players. On the other end of it, you've got the most cold-hearted Bill Belichick. And these guys, in some degree, in the headlines this week, the Michael Bennett news kind of going national yesterday, that you can does it really matter in the NFL what end of that spectrum you're going to go, managing players, managing pros, and managing the egos in professional sports today? It's just such a difficult task.
Oh, no question about it, because, you know, now the players have, you know, different agendas and different thought processes and, you know, maybe shorter attention span for the hard work that might be necessary. Now, again, this team has been great with the hard work part of it. But again, I think, you know, it's got to be very, very difficult. And that's why, you know, you have more coaches than not that get this task and they fail. And that's why, you know, the good ones really stand out, the Pete Carrolls, the Bill Belichicks, the Mike Tomlins and others.
You know, Salke had a good list this morning. He was pinging me right before the show started with some of these different agents, John. And, yeah. And I guess there was a survey done, and I'm curious how much.
Have you seen this yet from USA Today?
I have not, no.
Okay, so they asked NFL agents, who or a group of agents, who do you respect the most? Which owner, GM, decision maker, et cetera, do you respect the most? And who do you trust the least? Who do you think they respect the most?
As far as just
in dealings as an agent, yep, and interacting with those teams.
Who do the agents respect the most?
Probably the ones that give the most money, I would imagine. Howie Roseman gets the...
No, you know, it was Ozzie Newsome.
Ozzie Newsome? Oh, good.
Yeah. And then number two is Bill Belichick. Number three, our very own John Schneider here in Seattle, mm-hmm, followed by Chris Ballard, Kevin Colbert, and Les Snead. Who do they trust the least?
This is pretty fascinating.
Wow. This is a group of four. Is very interesting. Who do NFL agents trust the least?
Well, I would have to think that the new management in Cleveland gets, you know, absolved because now,
yep,
they're...
Yep, they were not listed.
They were not listed because
the old management was not well thought of, but this was not listed here.
Yeah. Let's see. So we have to look at some of the worst teams right now. Just give me the list.
The least trusted decision maker is Bruce Allen from Washington.
Okay.
Followed by Mike Tannenbaum in Miami.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought this one was pretty interesting. Coming in as even less trusted than Bengals owner Mike Brown, who I thought had zero trust, is John Elway.
Really?
Yeah, that's stunning. Doesn't that surprise you?
Well, I you can see this from one standpoint, how tough he can be to negotiate with. I mean, remember, this is a guy that went to Peyton Manning and asked him to take a pay cut, and Peyton had to take it. I mean, he had to take a significant pay cut, like $3 million. Yeah. And, you know, we saw the way that he handled the Elvis Dumervil situation when Dumervil didn't get his paperwork in on time. He was released. So, yeah, I could see that if you're an agent, I mean, John Elway puts his number out there, and it's like, if you don't like it, well, guess what? Then that's too bad. I mean, I could see where agents would do
trusted.
That.
Yeah, anyway, so he comes in number three on that list. We'll see how well you trust Howdy to give you a good wild card today.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
What's one of the most dangerous things you ever did when you were a kid?
Dangerous things? I mean, I was never one that was really good on a bike, right? And so probably that was dangerous because, I mean, anytime I would try to get on the bike and do it, I would always, you know, get cut up and fall down and all those different things. So that was pretty dangerous. You know, fortunately, you know, growing up where I grew up, I mean, you really didn't get into too bad of things. I mean, you know, the danger was sometimes walking the streets. I mean, that was danger because you can get switchblades and things of that nature. So I guess, you know, walking to school sometimes at the age of 13 and 14 can be a little bit dangerous because you never know what night is coming up.
You ever get in a fight, John? You ever get in a fisticuffs? A good old...
I have one big one.
Did you really?
Yeah, because what happened was...
Mean Joe Green?
No, Vinny Mills ripped up my Jim Pagliarone baseball card. And so I got so mad at him down at the junior high, Braddock Junior High, that I was actually taking his head and banging against a cement wall.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
For ripping up the baseball card.
Yeah, don't do that.
It was a Jim Pagliarone baseball card with a big blue sky and all that stuff.
Yeah, I could
see
the
pretty
card.
Fortunately, after about the second time I banged his head, people were grabbing me. And,
wow.
Yeah, you lost it. You snapped.
Do you think you could ever snap like that again?
No, never.
No, that's the only thing in your life that's made you snap like that?
Yep. Like that, yeah.
Wow.
Love it, John.
I wish I could say that. All right, John, great stuff as always. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks.
There you go. John Clayton with us every day at 7:15. I snap like that on like a daily basis.
Yeah, but you're not going to bash my head into the
wall. Well, I don't have the physical strength in order to do it, but that doesn't mean I haven't.
Do you know,
like,
how many times you've died in Mike Salk's head?
All of them in our first year of working together. All right, coming up next, Brock was in the good seats last night, up close and personal to watch the best team in baseball and the Seattle Mariners. What did he come away with? He'll tell you next on Brock and Salk.
Here it is, Distilling Company's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you purchase our award-winning spirits, remember to choke up on it for better control. Then send it down like a trip back to the minors. You can't spell baseball without BSB. Here it is, Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, Brock and Salk down at Safeco Field today. Everybody enjoying the wild card today. Loving the image of John Clayton bashing somebody's head against the cement block and also pulling the switchblade. So you never know what you might find in Discovery, Brock. And we discovered quite a bit this morning.
For my men's group, and we all got together last night to celebrate my 42nd birthday. And for the men's group, I said, we need a good laugh, chuckle on the way home. So I played them the Bob McGraw's third hour from last week, where they played the wild card of Clayton when he was battling. I mean, when he was fighting it out.
The great coughing fit of 2018.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Was that a lot of fun. But I made a I'm not – catastrophic's too strong.
No, no.
But one of the fine fellows, Graham from Carnation, his daughter had an event last night and supported her, so there was an open seat. And I thought, well, maybe we'll just have an open seat. We're three pretty big guys, and maybe we'll just have an open seat.
In the Diamond Club?
Yeah.
That seems disrespectful to the Diamond Club.
It does.
That's sort of like Michael Bennett reading in front of Pete. Like, you're disrespecting the Diamond
Club. It's true.
And whomever got you those tickets, I think would be pretty mad.
There's no question about that. So ultimately, I put it up to the two Steves. I said, what do you guys want to do? And they said, we want to meet this boy, Howdy.
Oh, interesting. So you decided to disrespect the person who gave you the tickets even more.
Yeah. And I thought, you know what? I just had 5 days with him. But
I had so much time with him. Can I possibly bear another?
And it was nothing about you. It's about Melissa. Like, is Melissa going to be a little upset that, again, I pull him from home and everything else? So he ends up coming. And
Melissa's upset. She was overjoyed.
Please.
You're taking the garbage disposal out of the house for the night? Sounds good.
So this was you teased some of my takeaways from last night, and this was the biggest. Boy, Howdy came, and he did two things last night. Number one, he goes to the popcorn stand twice, not once, twice. And Steve, my Mensa friend, came back and said, by the way, you could never call me Boy Howdy again. Oh, thank you for the music, Howdy. Don't ever call him Boy Howdy. What I watched him just do with the popcorn is the biggest man thing. You need to call him Man Howdy. He went triple layer on the popcorn. Popcorn butter. Popcorn butter. Popcorn butter.
That's what they do in the movie theaters. I don't understand why this is such a big deal.
Because in the movie theaters, it's a giant tub. In the Diamond Club, it's like
it's a cup.
I didn't pour as much as I'd put in a cup.
Yeah, you put as much as you would put into a tub, into a Dixie cup full of popcorn.
When you can turn the popcorn cup over, upside down, and no popcorn comes out.
So gross.
It was truly unbelievable.
Was that the highlight of the night?
No, so I snapped a pic at the end of the night. Well, I sent the pic at the end of the night.
Yeah. I didn't think it was real, though. I thought it was like a Sasquatch thing.
No. No, he pulls a shopping bag out of his jacket. Of course, he wears his jacket with all the pockets.
Shopping bag?
Yeah, like a plastic Safeway bag.
Like from American Beauty?
He pulls it out, and in go the remaining desserts that are left.
No, he did not.
These fables are getting too ridiculous.
Seriously.
People are not going to keep believing when in these stories.
Switch blades and head banging against a cement wall? What's more believable?
This.
Okay.
This is totally, to anybody who knows Howdy, this is totally believable.
In go the brownies, in go the cookies, in goes the pie, in goes.
Now hold on, let me try to save Howdy. Howdy, I'm going to throw you a life rope. Okay. Did you bring those things home for Melissa?
Well, I mean,
oh come on, Howdy. Here is the life vest you need. Did you bring those extra desserts home for your beautiful wife, who was home dealing with your two young children?
There were some things that I brought home that are still there that she will eat.
Howdy, you are the worst. You are the worst. That is really
all right. Let me buzz through this, you can shoot these down in a blaze of glory if you'd like. The Astros are 25 games better than the Mariners. And that's where some of the projections are, but you just say that out loud, and it just doesn't feel right. It just I don't like to say that. But I heard Graz say yesterday, that's a 105-win team. And Houston, they may be more than that.
Might be 140.
They may be more than that.
They're really good.
Yeah, I mean, that rotate, they just do, I mean, they just do everything well.
Yeah, I was saying to Lydia, we talk about five tool players. How many tools do the Astros have as a team? All of them? What tools are left that they don't have? What don't they do well?
Do they have an elite base stealer? I mean, Altuve can do it, but maybe that's the
one thing. Altuve and Springer can both run. Yeah. They don't. I think they just don't steal that much because they have such a good lineup. There's no reason to.
And I can't fault Brocious and Service and the game plan going in to be aggressive. They stole three times, which was awesome. And, you know, you're going to send Gamble there. I mean, that's Gamble that can run, that just stole a base. And he gets thrown out on a tremendous throw and an unbelievable pick. And then the other defensive plays. And, yeah, I mean, that is an elite team. Number two. And I don't know I didn't see this on TV the last few days, but just seeing it in person, Nelly is beat up, man. Nelly is beat up. And whether it was a tumble down the stairs and it was just solely the ankle, you know, Howdy and I watching him, you know, just try to run and move. Now, he could swing, and he was still violent in his swing, and we saw that the other night with the, you know, the one-arm home run. But is Nelly already 16 games in more significantly beat up than we'd ever want to
Would you like to see him take some more time off?
No. This
Does
team
Nelly
is
have
so
any hits
thin.
Since he's come back other than home runs?
Other than the home run, I don't think so.
I mean, it's hard to imagine. I could actually see him dumping a ball into right field and getting thrown out of first.
Yeah, you know what? It's a real bummer Healy's out.
Yeah.
Okay, because if Healy was out, I would say, do you play Vogie at DH?
But you can't do that now.
Yes.
No, you'd have to bring up Modern and stuff. It's funny. I saw our guy Luke Arkins, who writes for Prospect Insider and stuff, great on Twitter. He was tweeting last night, he was at the game, that some people behind him were, like, getting on Cruz for not hustling down the line. Like, what's with this guy? Why isn't he hustling to first base? Like,
he
he's saving every ounce of his energy to try to hit because it's the only thing he can do right now.
That's exactly right. The other one...
Just stay on that one for a minute. How nervous does it make you about this year? Like, are you expecting that to get better as he plays, or are you worried that, like, the new normal for Cruz is that he's going to have a lot of trouble?
He's just going to have naked injuries. Yeah. He's had naked injuries the last couple of years.
Yeah, it was old.
Yes, but he's going to fight through them, and Healy has just got to get back. So at least you have a Vogelback option as a designated hitter, and that leads me to him. And Steve, my buddy Steve, said to me yesterday, he played baseball at Wazoo. And when Vogelback hits that ball in late in the game, it gets over out to, like, that's a hit. For 100 years, that's a hit. For 150 years of baseball, that's a hit. And then, actually, they were in the shift, so it gets over Springer or Correa, and then Altuve comes out of nowhere, sweeps it up, throws to first. Like, that's just, I'm sorry. These shifts in baseball are just starting, and I know for some it has annoyed and irritated them over the last few years. I guess when you're in person and you watch a hard hit ball just right to somebody because everybody has shifted, and you have a Robbie Cano, who maybe has the greatest hands in baseball right now, Mike, and some of the best bat control, and they shift on him and he can't do it. I say out loud to myself, are the guys at the major league level just not capable of hitting it the other way? They're just trained not to. They just can't do it. You just can't do it. You're just going to keep hitting into the shift and hitting into the shift. And even the best in baseball, whose muscle memory or whose hands or whose bat speed or bat control, they still cannot be effective against it. And it, man, it's just diminishing. That should be a hit. That should be a hit. That was always a hit. And for those guys at the AAA level, the Coast level, the majors level, the Summer League level, the Single A, the Double A, the Triple A, those are hits. And then you get to this level, and it's just not a hit.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this before, and this goes into sort of the broader thing I keep bringing up, which is the better we get at learning how to win games in every sport, the worse it is for fans. The worse it is for the viewing product that all of us are watching at home. The shift is a really good idea if you want to win games.
Yes.
The idea that there was ever a Mariners pitcher who was getting mad and like who was it? What's his name? Who they shipped back off to
Wade,
Baltimore. Wade Miley. Who was getting all, I don't like the shift. This isn't good for me. And Taiwan Walker also kind of complained about it. Like, you guys are being ridiculous. It is absolutely necessary.
Wade Miley complained about everything, though.
True. But it is mandatory if you want to win in today's version of baseball. But it's terrible for the fans.
Is it possible, Mike?
Terrible for fans.
I mean, honestly, is it possible for Robbie and to Kyle to just hit a chopper to third base?
It must not be. Funny. Who was it who hit one? Cruz went the other way against the shift. I think it was him. And hit it directly to the first baseman. Just like, man, that guy's just right there in the perfect spot. So, yeah, no, I get it.
And then my last thing is just going to be D. Gordon in center field. Just kind of watching that development over the course of the year. It was going to be impossible, no matter how much ease he had in the spring. It was impossible to think that a Gold Glove second baseman forever is going to make an instantaneous jump and play center field the way that we have seen Leonis Martin or Franklin Gutierrez or Mike Cameron, some of the greats in this building, which you have to. I mean, in this place, as cavernous as it is, you have to play defense up the middle. And, you know, again, kind of a tough jump on the ball, a play that any of those guys I mentioned are going to make 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
He can't get it to the gap last night.
Just barely sneaked over his
glove. So his development and his mindset of tackling that over the course of a season, I think, will be a big deal.
I would agree, and I think he'll be great at it. I mean, I think he's got all the ability to be a really good center fielder, but asking him to be at Leonis Martin's level, just, you know, the most recent example right now.
Asking him to do something at this level that you've never done, I mean, that's not – these are the best of the best at it.
There's no doubt.
Especially who they played last night.
All right, good stuff. Brock and Howdy together at the baseball. You guys have really spent a lot of time together
now
recently.
You've gotten away from Boy Howdy. You just call him Howdy. So yeah. Maybe that's what I got to do, too.
Well, it's really just for convenience sake.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because my buddy turned to me and said, he is not a boy. Don't. It's disrespectful to call him
a boy. He may not be in a relationship much longer if he keeps taking desserts from the Diamond Club and not bringing them back for his wife.
Is it possible they've got surveillance cameras in the club? They got pictures of him late last night, not just my grainy picture?
Like, I don't think you're supposed to ever bring food back from a buffet.
Well, it's like the casino buffet. Right. You put something in your pocket, they're going to be on.
Oh, absolutely. You ever go to one of those all-you-can-eat sushi places, and they're, like, adamant that you can't take anything afterwards.
The arrogance not put in your pocket to pull out a plastic bag.
Are you shocked that Howdy showed great arrogance? Go figure. All right. I got a couple questions for you today, Brock. Coors Light's Blue 42, including I think this is a really hard Husky question that I want to ask you. I'm really curious to see your answer because I tried to think about it last night, and I had to argue with myself and never came up with an answer. So it's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, Coors Light's Blue 42 as we are down at Safeco Field this morning. Scott Service with us at 9:30 before a little matinee baseball today, 12:40. That means what, 11:30 pregame show this morning here on 710, and then take you right up to game time. And then actually Danny David Moore going to be over at John Schneider's big event this afternoon, so they'll be there after the game. And the schedule will come out for the NFL. So a lot going on today, really busy day in the station. Brock, let's do a little Coors Light's Blue 42, and I'll start with this. I was thinking about the Husky spring game, which will be this Saturday. So if they go ones versus ones, and I don't know if they will or not, but if they go ones versus ones, as a Husky fan, who should you be rooting for, the offense or the defense? Who do you want to see be better?
Yes.
Yeah, no, you don't get to say yes.
Oh, I don't get to say
yes. I've been
yes.
thinking about this since yesterday, and I don't have an answer. You have to come up with an answer. This is your segment.
I think you'd like to see Jake and the receivers get going, in particular some of the young guys. I think if those guys, and Aaron Fuller's had a tremendous camp, he's been probably the highlight offensively of taking the next step. Chico, unfortunately, McClatcher, you know, they've been, and rightfully so, very guarded, very protective with his injury and his health situation, but I think seeing those wide receivers as a group find a way to get some separation. The tight ends on that team are tremendous. I mean, when you're going to see them in fall camp, and or if you're going to go to the spring game this weekend, and you just look at that group, there's some NFL dudes in that roster and in that personnel setting. So I think having those guys taste a little bit of success, have Jake feel good about it, I think that's more important. Because let's face it, week number one is going to be Auburn. Defense is going to be fine. Defense is going to make a whole lot of plays. It's going to be very stout against Auburn. It's going to be your ability in that elite competition to make plays at the biggest of moments for Jake and the personnel on the outside. I think that's what I'd like to see.
How must-win is that game for them? Is it must win for their season?
Yeah, Boy Howdy says it's 100% as we were meeting with Gus Malzahn.
I just can't imagine how.
I was telling Gus Malzahn.
Seasons. Wait, what did you say? Yeah.
Even if they go 11-1 and then win the Pac-12 title game, I would think that if they had started off the year by losing to an SEC game, forget it.
What is on the line for them and the conference?
Yeah, no kidding.
After what they did in the bowl season as a conference, enormous.
All right, question number two. All right, speaking of both the Huskies and the Seahawks as well, they both seem to be struggling to find one position. What is it?
Kicker.
Yeah.
You think about that? Did you see that?
No, but that's the first place I was thinking.
I mean, Van Soderberg is, and we watched him. I mean, you could point to that ASU game. If you want to point to the Redskins game for the Seahawks in the building right across the street from where we're sitting right now and say, yeah, you missed three field goals in that game. You make any of those. Or obviously the game winner against Arizona. That's two games right there. When you point to the Huskies last year at ASU, you make a couple. I mean, those are just chip shot. Those are gimmies. Like you have to have those every time on the road, especially against tough competition. Or, I don't know, week number one against Auburn in a game where points are going to be at a premium, where both teams are loaded with NFL defensive personnel, and you have got to feel good and have some confidence about that. It's been an up-and-down, choppy spring from what I could read through the Husky practices. I think that will be a legitimate competition. And Van Soderberg is the scholarship guy. He's going to be given the opportunity to really take that next step. They need it. Seahawks need it. That's a position we took for granted for a long time in this market, especially with the Seahawks. I don't think any of us did after watching the ball in the fall last year.
All right, question number three. You know, I like thinking about quarterbacks, and especially maybe one that the Seahawks could bring in here to compete a little bit for a backup job or even a third-string job to be on the practice squad. Any late round or, you know, the sort of guys you get right away in free agency following the draft, quarterbacks that we should be looking at?
Yeah, I was looking at this.
My guy from South Florida,
maybe. Yeah, I was spending some quality time with Brady Henderson yesterday, the old esteemed editor there at 710 Sports, who's over at ESPN. Covering the Seahawks now, and last year we did a piece on a bunch of 4710 ESPN on some of those mid-round possibilities, and there were a bunch of them last year. The Nathan Petermans who went on to start, and Davis Webbs, and some other guys that were mid-round, I think bona fide mid-round picks. This draft class to me has got the upper crust, and then to me a pretty significant gap, and then priority guys, priority free agents or late rounders, and I'll give you two: JT Barrett and your guy Quentin Flowers.
That's my guy.
Yeah, that you just look and you look at the level of collegiate productivity. JT Barrett at Ohio State shattered Big Ten records, the winningest quarterback at Ohio State, and went 4-0 against Michigan. 4-0 against Michigan. No Buckeye quarterback had ever done it. Had a lot of help around him. His release is problematic. He's not naturally accurate. He doesn't project terribly well, but a tremendous human, a wonderful competitor, and tough as all get out. He would be a guy that I think could be a priority free agent signing or maybe a very late round pick. And Quentin Flowers the same way. Can't throw it at the NFL level. Can't throw the passing tree. There's a lot of things he can't do. But my gosh, if you watched him play at UCF, put the team on my shoulders. And all I'm going to do is go out and ball. And you think of the old Daniels, right? The old quarterback out of South Florida, BJ, that also played a little slot receiver, a little special teams, same school, same skill set, much of the same dynamic bringing to the table.
Well, it seems to be something they like,
right?
Must
be two guys I would keep
an eye on. That kind of a player who can, you know, if it doesn't work out as a quarterback, maybe he can make a positional change. And Flowers certainly has the athleticism.
And if you gave knucklehead Boykin 2 years.
Exactly. I like Flowers. I watched him a bunch. That's definitely a guy I would have my eye on. How about, is he in this draft, Riley Ferguson?
Yeah.
You like him at all?
I do. Just not real athletic. The thing I like about this is I also look at who they brought in.
Right. No, I don't mean for them. I just mean in the NFL.
Yeah. Yes. Is kind of a late round pick.
Yeah.
Kind of like the kid out of Virginia too. I mean, there's some late rounders and there's some first rounders and then there's a little gap in between.
I watched a little more college football this year. I got a couple quarterbacks on my mind.
You feeling good?
I watched some Ferguson. I watched some Memphis take down UCLA.
You be like Boy Howdy.
I think I watched like four UCF games.
You tell Gus Malzahn what Boy Howdy told him. Like, everything's on the line week one, coach. Everything's on the line.
Yeah.
You do the same thing.
You know I watch my self-follow.
You do? Yeah, you did watch a bunch of ball. Good for you.
All right, coming up, Brock, let's get back. I kind of like to hear from the – can we hear from the people even when we're not here? Can we get the people on, up and at them a little bit this morning? It's a beautiful – I love when we're here at Safeco. We can see outside. The sun is shining. It is a beautiful day. And I'd like to get the people on the phone a little bit. When you heard this little bit about Mike Bennett, when you heard that Mike B. was deciding, I'm going to read a book in the middle of practice. Did you treat it like I treat voluntary workouts? Like, oh, my God, this is a slap in the face? Or were you like, eh,